All right, so what are we talking about?
I don't know, man. You want to talk about this Beyonce album?
We can. I mean, yeah. So what we want to do a little bit was
Wonderful.
That's how we're going to kick it off.
we can. Yeah. So we want to, initially when we first got the idea to talk to you was it was way back when Trinidad James was doing that whole thing in New York about and making people mad. But so what I definitely want to talk to you a little bit about is, obviously, what you're doing on the radio for Sunday nights, and really like a conversation about rappers' fascination with the radio.
Yeah, I mean, I can kind of give you guys a walkthrough of what I do. So I've been doing radio for almost like 13 years now. It was like 4 years in college, and then every summer in college, I would go home here to Seattle, and I would intern at the local, giant radio hip hop and R&B station up here, Cube 93. So I was doing like off-air stuff, like promotions department stuff. And then when I graduated and came back, they were looking to revamp their Sunday night show, which used to be something of kind of like a new music show, but they really played like new records from artists that were already getting exposure. So at that time, it'd be like, here's the new Nelly, or here's the new Lil Jon, or something. It was like people had already heard of these artists, and it was just like their new single, and it wasn't necessarily good music. It was just like brand new music. So they wanted to switch up and play something that had a little bit more kind of like musical integrity, or a little bit more of kind of focus put into the actual quality of the music, and they wanted to allow for kind of cooler stuff. So they looked at me as someone who knew a lot about music just in general, because I was just a music geek growing up, always on the message boards and downloading music and talking about it on Instant Messenger and Facebook and Twitter and whatever. I guess not Twitter at that time. That's weird that our show is older than Twitter. That's kind of scary. But yeah, and then so they got me to do kind of like a national perspective, and then they grabbed my co-host Jay Moore, who's like a longtime figure in the Seattle music scene. He's been an artist, a promoter, a manager, an agent, like pretty much everything you can do in the scene. Jay has done it. So he was kind of like the local representative, and then they paired us up. And that was 8 years ago. So we've been doing Sunday Night Sound Session every Sunday night. And our whole idea is that we're just going to play good music. Doesn't matter where it's from or who's it from. And, we kind of do it in the vein of like a Friday Night Flavors, if you're familiar with that show from LA. That used to be my favorite radio show on Power 106. Or like Future Flavors or The Wake Up Show, any of those kind of classic legendary hip hop shows. That's kind of like what we try to carry on. Although, as I get older, I like more stuff than just like the boom bap underground stuff that I really got into like in the late 90s. So we'll play whatever. I think we were the first station in the country to play that Gotye record. Even though it's not like a hip hop record, I just heard it online somewhere a long time ago, and I was like, man, this is kind of catchy. Like, I like it. I'm gonna give it a spin. And then of course it went on to be like this crazy number one international hit. But like, that's the kind of record that, man, if we like it, we just play it. Doesn't matter if they're rapping, singing, or wherever they're from. So that's kind of my story in a nutshell.
We just jumped right into it. That's great. Typically, we do a whole intro, so we should introduce ourselves for people who just happened to wander into this conversation. So this is Clock Radio Speakers, and we're here this week with DJ Hyphen. Hyphen, where can they find you on the internet?
Pretty much anywhere you search DJ Hyphen, so Facebook/DJ Hyphen, Twitter/DJ Hyphen. I'm on Instagram. I got a blog called The Audacity of Dope, which is something that sounded a lot cooler back when Barack's book, The Audacity of Hope, was relevant.
I was gonna say no offense, it felt very 2007 in a good way, but like
That's exactly when I made the blog. Actually, I worked for Barack's campaign, his first campaign, and so I was all like fired up on change and hope and Barack, and then I was like, yo, I'm gonna make a blog. I'm gonna call it Audacity of Dope, because that's dope. And it's not so dope later, but still works.
And you also do the fantastic inbox madness.
Yeah, so on Twitter, I think, it all it I can't even remember when exactly it started, but for the last 10 years, I've just been getting inundated with horrible music submissions and funny emails, and whether it's labels or artists themselves or unsigned folks, whatever it is, like my inbox is just really kind of a funny but also dark and scary place. And Gmail hates me because there's just so much music in there that I'm constantly running out of space and I got to delete everything. You know, similar problems that other DJs and bloggers these days probably have. But I remember getting some emails that were just so funny and just so silly. Like, I couldn't believe that people would actually think this was the way to get your music played. So I just remember tossing a couple of their funny phrases up with like the hashtag inbox madness. And so then I, you know, people were like, yo, you need to like archive these because these are hilarious. And so I decided to create just a little Tumblr for inbox madness. And I don't really take that too seriously, but people literally will hit me up like once a week and be like, yo, you should put out a book of these things. Like, that's kind of sad, but yeah, people find them funny and I find them kind of maddening, but every now and then I'll get one that's really top tier that I laugh at.
I don't get as many of those as I used to. Probably actually in the 2007, 2008, 2009 era, that was when I was convinced that I was really going to make it as a producer. So I was doing the, you know, producer conferences and beat battles in New York City. And I was doing the whole, like, the iStandard thing. And I was doing all that. And oh my goodness, I still have, you know, I gave, you know, 'cause I have multiple email addresses and the one that I would hand out and put on beat CDs. And I, you know, I get probably a small fraction of what you get, but it's pretty, yeah, some of it's pretty, pretty depressing. And Armand, I can only imagine what you get.
I don't, you know what? I get most of my stuff on Twitter because I don't really put my email address out there like that. I do, but I don't. But most of my stuff is like Twitter spam. You know, yo, check this, like in all caps, like they're yelling at me. And
then you click their page and they've sent that same message to like 25 other people.
Yes. How did you even find me? They'll just comb or they'll comb Twitter for like buzzwords. Or I don't know.
Yeah, and then it's like if you happen to have some sort of interaction with like someone really big on Twitter, you know, like I might talk to like Lupe or now like a good friend of mine like Macklemore, right, on Twitter. But if they ever like retweet you, then all of a sudden, you know, you are just now the target of all these new people that think, oh, this guy on Twitter, he must be able to put me on and change my life.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, I don't even listen to things on Twitter. I always just tell people, look, just send it to the email. I'll get to it when I can or if I can. But the problem is there's just so much in that email inbox that you can't really go through it all. Like, it's physically impossible. There's not enough time to go through it all. So for me, when I'm looking for new music, I'm kind of, A, part of it is the presentation. Like, you do have to come at me in a certain way where, it, you know, give me some sort of reason why I should listen to it, but don't go too crazy, which is what most people do. Or B, like, I'll trust a lot of people's ears. Like, if I see somebody's name pop up on a blog that I trust, right. Like my favorite blog is probably like the Smoking Section. I think they do a good job. So yeah, if I see your name consistently pop up on a blog or even just once, or if I see someone else on Twitter talking about you, then I respect, you know, the music, then I'll check it out. But I always tell these artists, like, look, it's my job to find music. So if you're dope, I've heard of you before you've heard of me. Mm. Like, you know, I'm just the DJ up here in Seattle, and granted with online stuff now, like, you can hear me all over, and we've been doing podcasts and interviews and all this kind of stuff that's been all over the net the last 7 or 8 years. But like, my job is to hear dope new music. So there's only been like two artists that I've ever, you know, been put onto that I'm like, wow, this artist is really dope, and I had never heard of him. Like, he came to me first. Like, that doesn't really happen.
Okay. I'm trying to think, what do we, you know, we didn't even introduce ourselves. Like, so normally it's funny. We normally do the podcast. We open with this whole spiel. So, Armand, where can the good people follow you, find you online?
Yeah, this is different from normal.
This is good. I like
different. Let's do the spiel. God, I just lost it. Now, facebook.com/clockradiospeakers. Clockradiospeakers.com is powered by the good folks at Tumblr. Follow us and share our shows there. We are also powered by SoundCloud, soundcloud.com/clockradiospeakers. We are also on iTunes, so you can hit us up on iTunes and subscribe, rate, comment, all that good stuff. Sunday nights, 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. Eastern, we're at thepulse-radio.com playing whatever we want for 2 hours. And the official Twitter handle is @CRSPodcast. We are not on Pinterest. And you can follow me on Twitter @ArmandWakeUp, ArmondWakeUp, all one word. Word.
And don't follow him on Instagram because he doesn't want your Instagram direct spamming. I'm sure.
It was funny. Like, nobody, everybody was like, oh, there's the thirst. Like, we talked about the lusty thirst, but there was no mention of the, hey, can you post this thirst on Instagram that I got 10 minutes after I upgraded my app.
So wait, someone sent you a direct picture on Instagram and it wasn't like, oh, hey, this is the picture of us from the weekend or whatever. It was, yo, this is my flyer. Can you post it?
Yes, it was a mixtape. It was like, my mixtape is coming out on, I think it was New Year's Day or something like that. Can you help me promote it? And I was like, nah, no, I can't, sir. And I know the guy. Like, that's the part that sucks. Like, I know him. And I'm like, just couldn't text me? Like, you just had to use Instagram direct? Like,
see, that's a perfect example of, like, you know, if you know someone, just email it to them or text them. Like you said, like, there's really no reason why he should be using that medium. Like, this is the thing rappers just don't understand. Like, you know, artists, they just don't get it. Like, they don't understand the best way to communicate with people. It's really not that difficult. But yeah, you shouldn't just take advantage of Instagram's new feature and be like, yo, this is the way I'm going to spam people.
I bet you somebody out there is thinking, okay, how can I be the first? They think they can be like the first to blow up or to whatever based off of the Instagram direct message thing. And it's like, no, that's not going to happen.
Question is Soulja Boy the only rapper to successfully blow up through spam?
I mean, how do we define spam? How did he blow up off of spam? I know he blew up off of like MySpace.
Right. But I know he was like, he was tagging in a spammy way where he would tag Tupac, Biggie, Lil Wayne. Like, he would like get people who were searching for other stuff to find his stuff.
I feel like Lil B might have done something like that. I feel like if you click on some of these Lil B videos, you'll see all the different tags on it, and it's like Tupac and Biggie and Jay-Z and all this stuff. But I don't know. I mean, I think it's good that Soulja Boy has been kind of knocked back the last couple of years. Like, that was an interesting time in music. That was the darkest time in music of the last like 20 years. Thank it was like you. Soulja Boy era.
Thank you. I'm like, the only person. Go ahead.
Yeah, I blame MySpace for all this. Like, MySpace did, I don't know, it laid the groundwork for a lot of really bad careers. And it was a dark time, man. It's so much better right now, though.
Yeah, I think we got so used to complaining about that era that, you know, we've been out of it for the last, you know, 2011 was pretty good. Last year was pretty good. This year has been really good. But it's like, we're so used to like the Snap era, the white tee, black tee, red tee, pink tee, airbrush tee, you know, bathing ape, like that era, you know, what were those hoodies, the LRG hoodies, the skeleton hoodies that zipped up in the front? Y'all remember those?
Yep. All the way to the top.
Yeah. Like, that era is, like you said, the dark ages of hip hop. And now that we're out of that, I think there's a group of people who just are completely, I don't know, just got used to complaining about it. And now that we're out, it's like they don't even realize it. It's crazy.
There's always going to be people who want to complain. And I'm like, first and foremost, one of them. Like, I don't know. Like, I think there's a lot of good music out there. But the way technology works, like, there's going to be so much bad music because the barrier to entry is non-existent. So if I want to make a record, I can make an album today off my computer. Horrible album, but there's nothing stopping me from making it and promoting it. As opposed to back in the day, like, my co-host always kind of uses this analogy, like, when Nas was coming up, like, they didn't just put Nas in the studio. Like, Nas had to go rhyme in the park and impress people who were there enough to get a shot at the studio, right? Like, think how many cyphers Nas was probably in before, like, Large Pro or whoever let him into the studio to record something. Like, you had to show and prove back then. You couldn't just be like, yo, I want to make an album and then go do it. But I mean, that time wasn't ideal either, because obviously you had a lot of people who were probably very talented who never got a chance to get into the studio. But these days, the barrier to entry is non-existent. So literally anyone can make an album. And then the problem is you just get so much music out there that it's difficult to really find the good stuff, which is what we try to do on our radio show. It sounds like that's what you guys do on your show. You know, that's why it's important to kind of align yourself with like-minded people that have similar tastes to you, that you can then, and actually similar goals, really, of just like finding and sharing good music. And that's the best way to use social media. The wrong way to use social media is to hit up everyone on your contact list and be like, yo, here's my new mixtape cover. Here's my new YouTube video. And then tag it with all those like Tupac and Biggie hashtags.
So I think for the example of using of Little B using those hashtags, I believe Little B, that could just be him trolling everybody as like some sort of weird performance art. It's Little B. When to take him seriously and when not to take him seriously is always a fine line. But I would say sort of what it sounds like what you're getting at, Hyphen, is this concept of sort of curation, right? So I think people – I think one of the reasons why your show has been successful is because, you know, it's because it's very trendy to – it's been trendy forever, for a while now, but it's really trendy to say that the radio sucks. I mean, well, I say radio does
suck. It's not even trendy. It's the actual fact.
But what I think is interesting is what your show does is it's exactly what you're saying, is there's a lot of stuff out here and we're curating. We're basically saying you can trust this brand that we have separate, you know, there's thousands of people releasing music every week, right? We have, it's some stuff you're familiar with. It's some new stuff you haven't heard yet. And we're sort of curating this. And I think that's part of the value of your show, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's all we're trying to do. Like, I make no bones about it. Like, I'm a fan. I'm not, you know, like, I've been lucky and work in this industry enough that some of these artists will actually know me and kind of call me friends. But, like, I'm not really kicking it with these people on a daily basis. Like, I'm not a celebrity. I'm just a dude who loves music. And so my only job, my only focus is to every week find a whole bunch of new records, hopefully from folks that people haven't heard of. Or if they have heard of the artist, maybe they haven't heard this song. And then I get the opportunity to play it over 100,000 watts, which is crazy. Like, we go from almost the Canadian border down to the Oregon border here in Washington. And then I archive it and put it online. So we got hundreds of people like listening online via the Audacity of Dope or just the email blast that I'll send out. But it's exactly what you said, which is, if you don't want to stay up on everything that's going on, if you don't want to be on Twitter 24/7, if you don't want to be like scouring the blogs and all over all the hip hop news sites and Rap Radar and all this, like 24/7, you can check in with our show once a week and hear kind of the dopest stuff that we think is out there for that week. Because, you know, at this point, if I was 18 years old, I'd just be online all day long looking at music and being on message boards, just like what I was doing when I was 18. And it'd be amazing. I would have so much fun. But like, I'm old now. I got a job. I don't have time to be kind of focus like that. I know a lot of people are in a similar boat where they can't just spend all day listening. So you can just come to our show and check out a bunch of songs that we think are good. And then hopefully, you know, you'll find something you like. We don't expect you to like everything, but there should be a couple tracks in there that you enjoy. And then, you know, find that artist, find who that artist has worked with, download the album, do whatever, and then just explore music on your own. Like, you know, listening is not a passive activity. Like, it's an active activity. You have to engage with it and be aggressive and find what you like. Because the radio is not going to play what you like. The radio is going to play what it thinks you want to hear. And what will get you to keep the station on and not change the channel. So I guess if you want to talk, we can talk about how like radio works if you want to get into that kind of depressing topic.
We don't have to. I mean, the point I was really trying to make, I mean, the whole reason why we even first thought that we wanted, you know, I mean, I sort of thought about asking you to be on the show for a little while. But what really prompted it was this, you know, the whole thing about was Trinidad James' comment when he was in New York, and the very predictable sort of there's like an infinite amount of, and it's funny, because I know some of these guys, and more specifically, I know some of the DJs who work with these guys. There's like an infinite amount of New York rappers who rise up, who are like infuriated, right, at the state of radio. And there's all these opportunities where every so often they you know, make some noise, whether it was Kendrick not saying their name on Control, or whether it's, you know, Trinidad James coming in or whatever. But so I guess hyphen that whole long-winded thing. But my question to you is it that rappers don't understand how radio works? Is it that the fans don't understand how radio works? Or is it something else?
I don't think anyone really understands how radio works. I think when we were kids coming up, radio was either used as like background noise. You know, I used to put it on when I was doing homework, or if you're riding in the car with your friends, you might toss it on. It was something that you could kind of associate yourself with on the brand. So like here in Seattle, there were two big stations growing up, and one was like the rock grunge station and the other was like the hip hop station. So it was a very big deal to align yourself like with one of those, because it said a lot about who you are. So if you picked the hip hop station, you were a hip hop dude. You wore baggier clothes. You probably liked basketball, like et cetera, et cetera. So as people got older, I think they expected some sort of musical integrity and consistency from the radio station to really protect this brand that they were putting out. So our station here, continually used to talk about being like the cool hip hop brand, and we expected them to play cool hip hop songs. But the radio doesn't exist to serve the culture or serve the fans. The radio exists literally to sell commercials. So they will play whatever they want or whatever they think will sell the most commercials and keep people listening. Artists don't understand this at all either. Artists, for some reason, think the radio is there to like break them or support them. Like, it couldn't be further from the truth. What does the radio care about you as an artist? Mm. Like, the radio wants to sell Domino's pizza at the break. Like, they want to sell Nike shoes during that commercial. They want to sell movie commercials. Like, they don't care who they're playing. They could play – every artist could be – or every song could be from Drake or whoever. Or they could be playing classical music. They could be playing, like, Row, Row, Row Your Boat. Whatever will sell commercials. I was hoping they could play Silence for 15 minutes in between commercial breaks if that's what they thought people wanted to hear. So they'll pick the safest records that are the most popular records, which are testing well, right? So they do all that research where they call up people and say, are you familiar with this song? Do you like this song? Would you change the channel if this song came on, etc.? So they do all that research for every song out there. They pick the safest records so they can appeal to the lowest common denominator, just like if you're making a movie. You know, just put shiny things and explosions and sex and drugs and everything. And that's the lowest common denominator that everyone can kind of relate to. And they'll try to get as many people as possible to listen. Fans don't understand that. They think that we're actually picking music that we like in radio. And I am on my show, but the rest of the station and most stations out there aren't picking what they like. They're picking what research has told them people will not change the channel over. And then the artists are completely misaligned. They think you need radio to blow up. It's definitely a useful tool if you can get it. But one of my tweets with that Trinidad James stuff was like, don't make music for the radio. Like, radio will come to you when you're hot. Like, see what happened to Drake, right? Mm-hmm. He was making music and then radio came to him. It was like, yo, we got to play this Best I Ever Had record. It's crazy. Macklemore did the music he was going to make and made a funny record called Thrift Shop, and radio came to him. Then once they grabbed it, they did both promote those records. Like, Motown and Universal promoted Best I Ever Had, and Macklemore signed Warner Brothers to essentially promote his music. So it became part of the machine. But the idea of radio will come to you, radio will find what people like and then play it. Radio is not going to determine what people like.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, something that happened this past week, not radio, but something, I mean, to me a little similar, was Wale getting all upset with Complex. Right? So Complex magazine has their top 50 albums, doesn't include him, and he forgets that their objective is to get page views. Right? The reason why Complex breaks everything up into you have to click to see the next thing is because they get to show a different ad. They get to collect a different page view. Their objective is to get people irate and get them to share it and go, "Can you believe what Complex did?" But he saw Complex as some sort of like, no, you need to validate me.
Right.
And then, of course, hilariously threw Juicy J under the bus, even though he was on Juicy J's album, which is just hysterical to me.
I want to talk about that for a second.
Yeah.
The idea of artists that we know can rap, like Wale can rap, Drake can rap. These are the kind of people that we know when they were growing up, they were listening to good rappers, right? Like, Drake always talks about his favorite artists were like Fonte and Andre 3000 and like Big L and people like that. The trend of those people, once they get big, to all of a sudden decide that they're going to be friends and promote all these rappers who we know are horrible, like Juicy J, like Waka Flocka, like Gucci Mane. And I'm not saying they make horrible music, although they do, but that's completely subjective. But we know they're not talented, like skilled lyricists, and that's not really debatable. But the fact that these people who are kind of focused on lyrics will then befriend and promote these people is the funniest thing to me, because it's all completely fake. It's like, man, they're finally sitting with the cool kids at lunchtime and they're going to be their new friends. And then when they get mad or when you catch them behind doors, that's when they resort to this, like, yo, you're telling me like Juicy J's better than me? And like, no, we're not, because Juicy J obviously can't rap that well. And Wale, for as being as corny as he is, he can rap and he makes some good songs here and there. But I just love that they have this like fake friendship, like Drake being great friends with like DJ Khaled and Birdman and these people, where it's like, dog, you don't listen to these people. Like, you don't respect their lyrical ability. You don't respect them as rappers, but yet you have to be friends with them because, like, he gets on a record with Future, or what was that Tony Montana song? Who did that one?
Future.
Yeah.
Was that Future? Okay. So I feel like Drake's been on a couple of those records, or like the Migos record, right? Like the Versace thing.
Yeah.
Like, it's this kind of fake world that they want to be part of, but we know it's not deep to their core. And so when Wale gets pissed, the first thing that comes out of his mouth is like, yo, you're really going to put me in this category with this dude who can't rap for shit. And it's like, ah, we knew you were fake. Like, why even befriend him? Why be on those records?
Right, right. Absolutely. That, I think that's one of the larger issues. I think for Wale, one thing about him is I read a really good article. I think it was Andreas Hale wrote it on Two Dope Boys yesterday, where basically it was just like all this stuff has been building up where Wale has just put himself in these positions where he keeps getting knocked down, you know, how Interscope did him, the attention deficit, the chilling record with Lady Gaga, all this stuff. He bounces back with MMG. That's still not good enough. He drops Ambition. It's his most successful album, but then his fan base isn't feeling him. Then he makes an album like The Gifted to cater specifically for his fan base, and then they still don't like that album, although the critics like it. Now the critics are not just Complex, but I believe Spin, and I think Spin left him off. And his thing was, he probably should have used Migos as a better example, because the Migos mixtape got put on both of those lists for best hip hop albums and tapes of this year. And really name, I don't know if you, I thought The Gifted was good. I don't know if you can name 50 projects, hip hop projects, that were better than that. And if you got to reach down and do Migos, like, there's a problem. So I understand that. But, you know, on the flip side, it doesn't help that Wale is very emotional, I guess we could say. Passionate is what we would call it for some people.
He's got Kanye's mouth without Kanye's discography is how I think I saw someone put it online.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Because if Kanye does that same rant, Kanye gets a pass for that.
Because Kanye's the best musical artist we have in hip hop. Like, Kanye can really say whatever he wants. Like, he's a fool, but he's also a genius at the same time. Like, you know, we'll allow that for sure. But while they, I don't know, he's making quality records, but, you know, he's like a solid MC, makes solid songs. They definitely come off as corny sometimes. And within the industry, I will say, I've been doing this 13 years. Like, he's the most difficult person I've ever had to deal with in the industry, to the point where he came to our summer jam like 2 years ago. And they're asking us like, you know, yo, as the hip hop show, like, who do you want to interview here? And I'm like, well, we got to, you know, definitely chop it up with J. Cole. That's our homie, Macklemore, those kind of folks, whatever. And I was like, I'm not interviewing Wale. I'm passing. I have no desire to ever interview Wale again, because it's a waste of time. Because just personality wise, he's not engaged. He's not an enjoyable person to work with. So that kind of stuff adds up, man. Those are the kind of things where if you do release an album that's not great, but it's not bad, and then all things being equal, they're going to take something else. They're going to pick someone else. Like, you know, no one wants to work with you. No one wants to big you up. Like, those are just, that's just facts. Like, I've never talked to any other DJ who's like, man, you know who was a really great interview? Wale.
Wow.
That's never come out.
Wow. So does that speaks to a point where a lot of, and you guys, I would love for you guys to kind of co-sign this, but I feel like a lot of talented artists just kind of have the mindset that their talent is going to take them all the way up, and they don't understand the power of networking and also putting yourself in a position to use what you have to benefit the other person. So if I have a great interview, if I'm on Hyphen show as an artist and Hyphen, you and I have a great interview, not only does it look good for my brand, but you look good as a journalist, in the media field, and you get to expand into different markets to where you're not just doing hip hop. You could be on CNN in 5 or 10 years. So, you know, does that pretty much co-signs the theory of, not only do you need good music, but you also need a good attitude and a willingness to kind of serve other people who, just one, have the same passion as you for hip hop and for the culture, and that two, have the opportunity and the ability to set you up in a better position.
You know, it's funny that he mentioned Juicy J, because Juicy J is like a prime example of the opposite of this. Like, I'm not necessarily a big Juicy J fan. I'm more of a lyrical, you know, New York boom bap kind of guy. At least that's how I came up. And so Juicy J came to Seattle. I had no idea. I wasn't really interested in going to the show, but his people hit me up and was like, yo, we want to be on your show. We want to do an interview. Can we come through? And I was like, yeah, you know, it'd be cool to chop it up. I mean, in his circle, he's like a legend, right? Like in that Memphis rap world, like Juicy is a legend. So I was like, yo, I mean, I definitely would like to meet him. I met him and he's like the nicest guy ever and had a really enjoyable interview with him. Super cool. I'm not going to go home and really bump his music because it's not personally my favorite. I'd much rather bump something. But seeing how Juicy is just the nicest guy and will network and chop it up with anyone, that's exactly what Wale's missing.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really speak to, you know, who's friendlier. But the one thing I'll say is I think, you know, what Wale's forgetting too is, you know, frankly, Juicy had better beats this year. And he might have had some catchier songs. Like, you know, I don't know. I wonder if he, again, I've never met him. I don't know. He's coming off as though he feels like he's entitled to something that the rest of the world hasn't quite agreed that he's earned yet.
Well, yeah, it's kind of, he also thinks like, you know, and we're all from this world where rappers with lyrics get respected. And so I think Wale thinks he's a good writer. He should be automatically respected for that, but it doesn't really work like that. And most of us kind of realized years ago that being a good rapper is not enough to make you a celebrity, to make you cool, et cetera. Whether we know people around our cities that are good rappers that just haven't put all together, or we see, you know, underground MCs that have been trying for years, like amazing rappers, the best of the best. That's not what it's about.
So I'm trying to think if there's anything else I want to ask you about radio. I thought, you know, it's kind of interesting to hear. So it's funny, on one hand, so I'm thinking back to your comments about radio. So on one hand, yeah, radio's objective is to sell advertising. But whether it's, you know, shows like what you're doing, other shows that have really moved to be online only, right? If you think about like something like what, you know, like Mark Ronson's doing with East Village Radio, or like there's certainly a niche out there.
Oh, that's Mark Ronson's?
Yeah, East Village Radio.
Oh, did not know that. Okay.
Well, he at least has a show on there. I don't know if that's his. And then like Elliot Wilson has a show on there?
Yeah, Elliot Wilson has a show on there Friday nights.
Yeah, and Mark Ronson's right after him, actually. So there's clearly, and then never mind what's happened on like satellite radio, there's clearly a market, right? Maybe it's not quite as broad as what radios, like big radios used to, but there's clearly a market of people who want to hear something different. So, you know, whether it's, I mean, it's, because, you know, you could just look online, like, you know, when Sunday nights come, like people are tweeting about your show.
Yeah, I mean, right? there are fans out there who want good music, and those people are music lovers. So the people who are listening to the radio right now, I would argue, don't really love music. They like it. You know, it's enjoyable to them. They'll put it on in the car when they're driving to the club or something. But they're not the music lovers. They're not the tastemakers. And so what happened with radio is radio lost the tastemakers. They lost the cool kids in the room, essentially, the kids that like love music and find that next thing. Now radio is super reactive. So by the time something's on radio, the cool kids have already moved off it, right? Yeah. And there are some examples of crossover where, like, you know, a Lord song might still be played on the radio while the indie folks think Lord is still good, which she is. Like, she's a pretty dope artist. But so radio is going to grab some of those records. And I would argue, like, Drake falls into that category too. Like, I think most people who are the tastemakers still like Drake. I mean, he comes out with those four records that one night, like the Migos record, The Motion, what, the one with J. Cole, I forget what the other one was, but he like shuts down Twitter because the tastemakers are still like, yo, Drake just dropped four records and they were all good records. And then radio reacts and plays like Versace, you know, a little bit later. So those people are out there. They do live mostly online, it seems. And it's possible to reach them, but you have to kind of know where they live and give them the music that they're looking for. And that's kind of what we do is play brand new stuff and hopefully some of it resonates.
I think in a way radio, you know, much like how TV is being disrupted, a lot of people would just rather watch Netflix, right? They'd rather, you know, and now Netflix is doing original shows and stuff like that. And TV started off right as the three channels, then it became four, and then it became, you know, this infinite universe of cable networks. And, you know, the major TV networks, ABC, CBS, they spend really huge amounts of money on stuff like sports because that's the way that they get a big audience because that's how their business model is built. But there are, you know, the success of Netflix, of these little niche cable networks that now have shows that are just as popular as what's on the main networks, you know, it took a while for that business model to sort of for them to figure out how to monetize those little niches. Radio has not figured out how to monetize because there's clearly these niches out there, right? Radio is still this, we're like, you know, they're acting like it's like they're CBS in 1955, right? Like they've got, well, if you're just going to turn it on and you're going to watch it because that's what's on, right?
But yeah, they're appealing to the lowest common denominator. They're not going after those groups because they don't think they're big enough. So they're going to try to go after the widest group and play the most base level song that can appeal to the widest number of people. So that Bieber song or that Rihanna song is now getting played across almost, you know, five different genres of stations. It used to just be on the pop station. Now it's on the hip hop station. Now it's on the R&B station. Then it's even being spiked on the old school station. Some of them are breaking through to even alternative stations. Like, they're just being very conservative and limited in their programming because they want to reach the widest number of people. And I said widest, not whitest. That also might be true.
Well, it's funny. Armand and I, we've had this ongoing conversation all year where Armand has really been talking about sort of events in music, how that has become like a thing, right? Whether it's – and how people sort of get excited about an event surrounding a release of music almost sometimes more than the music itself, right? Yeah. Jay-Z's album earlier this year to me is a good example of that, right? Where people got so excited about this concept of, oh, he comes out of nowhere, we got this commercial and it was like this all-star album. And, they, you know, people were talking about the event and sort of – the economics more than the music itself, right? Yes. And I think that's, you know, I think that's sort of the same concept. It's like what you're talking about with Drake and the Four Records. Like, you know, artists now are trying to create these events, right? We've had this whole year of really unusual album rollouts, yeah. Right? The way that Timberlake rolled out his album sort of slowly started it off where all of a sudden it's like, oh, 6 weeks or 4 weeks or whatever of wall-to-wall Justin Timberlake promotion, right, all of a sudden dropped out of nowhere. You had sort of Daft Punk like teasing their lead single for like weeks on end. You had what, you know, Armand and I have this ongoing debate about did Kanye really do promotion for Yeezus or not? But that was certainly an unusual release. Lady Gaga did like an app. And now, of course, Beyonce. So like it appears as though people are really trying to – they're trying to unite – artists, at least big name artists, they seem to be trying to sort of create that excitement to sort of unite those two worlds, right? To they want to create, they're going to have stuff played by radio, but they want people to feel excited about it again.
Yeah, they want it to be cool. I remember the first time I noticed when basically the story wasn't about the music itself was 50 Cent. Like the story in 2002 was 50 Cent's buzz. And then when his buzz started to get buzz, that's when it kind of jumped the shark. Like people weren't really focused on the music. But the only conversations you would have about 50 Cent were about how many conversations people were having about 50 Cent. It was really this weird jumping the shark moment. And so I noticed that. And that also happened with Macklemore this past year, where it became the conversation not about Macklemore's music, but about like what he was accomplishing and then how many people were arguing about what he was accomplishing, whether it was an independent thing or whether it was a major thing because he signed like a label. But I think you hit the nail on the head. These artists are trying to that are relevant, and they have a bunch of different mediums for them. You know, it's not just making a music video and putting it on MTV or making a song and getting it on the radio. Like you've got Instagram, you've got Twitter, you've got Facebook, you've got a lot of different ways to reach people, and the smart ones are uniting their fans across all those mediums and creating a moment. Like we're all going to just remember this Beyonce thing. I haven't even listened to the album yet, but we're going to remember that night when Beyonce dropped an album out of nowhere and kind of shut things down on the internet. And that's all people talked about. Now, whether that turns into a classic album or something that people look back on fondly, I don't know. That time will tell on that, but she definitely created a moment, but those moments can be passing, right? This is what like Drake talked about in that Elliot Wilson interview about Control, where he was like, yeah, Kendrick created a moment, but do you remember the verse? Like, do you remember how that verse starts?
Right. Yeah. It really does come down to the music, and it brings, and this is a point that Doc and I made 2 weeks ago or last week, where we talked about when Jay ranked his albums. where Jay didn't necessarily rank his albums based off of whether the albums were good or not. It was more based off of the impact that they made on the culture and what it did for his career.
Yeah.
Because, you know, honestly, American Gangster should have been a lot higher than what it was. And a few of those should have been switched around volume three, volume two. Like, you could have conversations about it. So at the end of the day, it really comes down to what is the music good? You know, like, all these moments are created, but here we are at the end of the year. And, you know, Doc and I have conversations offline, and it's like, a lot of we do a top 10 list at the end of the year, the 10 best albums of the year that we like. And I don't know if these records that have done success or have successfully created these moments, I don't know if those records are going to be on the list at the end of the year.
That's a good point. I mean, we also always have to realize that art is art and it's subjective. And as much as I joke about it and pretend like there's good art and bad art, there really isn't, right? So it's all depending on your fan base. So I can't tell a Juicy J fan that his art isn't good. I can tell him that I don't think his lyrics are complex, and the syllables aren't there and the content's not there, et cetera, et cetera. But I can't tell him whether it's good or not, because he just can't define that. So I guess I don't really know my point here, but
it's okay. We often don't have a point on the show.
Yeah, no, I'm talking myself into a corner, but I guess I just really want to make sure that whether the music is good or not, that's not really the point in the minds of a lot of these artists. Beyonce did not set out to create a classic album with this release. She wanted to set out to create a classic moment. Same thing with Jay-Z, right? This new rules. Maybe that's one of Jay-Z's new rules that I just haven't realized yet, which is, who gives a fuck about the music? It's about the business and how you do it instead. Maybe that's new rule 78, and I just haven't read there yet. But he didn't sit there and think, yo, I'm going to take time. I'm going to go get these classic producers or these up-and-coming guys. I'm going to really craft the best album I can make. He said, wow, you know, I've got this window where either he came up with the idea, or someone in his circle, or maybe it was someone at Samsung or Apple or whoever came up with the idea of what about this for a project rollout and a launch? And he's like, yo, I got this window to be able to execute this. Let me just slam these songs in and do it. Yeezus is definitely that, right? Yeezus he talks about recording everything in a 2-week period or something. That's not Kanye coming out trying to make the best music, although I do think Kanye has possibly the most musical integrity, and he cares more about his music than virtually all the mainstream artists that we see.
So with Kanye, with Yeezus, he was holed up in Paris recording, but didn't really get anywhere. And it was a last, as I believe I've read, it was basically a last minute sprint. Right, of course, with Rick Rubin playing some sort of a role, a last minute sprint to actually turn what he had into for Jay, if I remember reading correctly, and it's funny listening to this Beyonce album, if you look at the credits, it sort of makes more sense now. It was basically Beyonce was recording, but wasn't happy with how things were going, didn't really have a release date, was just sort of recording and had all these high priced people around. And from what I understand, Jay basically was like, okay, we can make an album with this, right?
Really?
Yeah. That's how it got started, based off the Beyonce sessions.
Oh, you're talking about Jay's album.
Yeah, Jay's album. Sorry, Jay, not yeah. Kanye. No, Jay's album. Jay's album got started based off the Beyonce sessions.
Yeah. Yep, that's true.
But no, you're right.
They changed the game with the way they released the music. Like, that's the biggest accomplishment for them with those albums, is the business changes that they made. The fact that Jay-Z went platinum before even releasing the album, that kind of idea, which I think is great. I'm not asking for someone to be able to do both. I don't really expect someone to literally change the music business and how it works and drop a 5-mic classic Reasonable Doubt at the same time. That would be pretty difficult to do. So the fact that he was able to accomplish one of those and then release a solid album at the same time. But I mean, it's Jay-Z. It's always going to be a solid album. It should be a solid album at worst, because he's one of the most talented rappers we've ever had. Would I have liked it if he took more time and made a great classic album? In this case, I would say no. I enjoyed what he did with the whole new rules and the way he changed the game. I'm willing to take that on this album. I hope his next album is less gimmicky and more about the music.
See, I thought Magna Carta was awful, but again, that's my...
That's fair. I would, You can't say that's awful when there's really legitimately awful music out there. Like,
no joke, I would rather listen to the Juicy J album than I would listen to Magna Carta. Like, I
that's fair. There are probably a lot of people like that, but I think there are still some records. You know, the Fuck With Me, You Know I Got It, the Somewhere in America record. I mean, basically, if you give Jay a decent beat and let him rap, I would rather hear that than give Juicy J the hottest beat and let him shout out random phrases and turn up.
My problem with Magna Carta is actually it's the production, right? It's that everybody made such a big deal over the production. But secretly, if you look at what Timbaland's done for the past, I don't know, 5 years, when he's not working with Justin Timberlake and Timberlake is specifically helping with the production, the quality isn't quite what everybody thinks it is, right? That, like,
yeah, it's more of a name for sure. I don't think, you know, if you ask people who their favorite producer are, I don't think I've ever heard anyone say Timberland ever. But I mean, he's been around for years. He's a legend. He's sold millions and millions of records and he's made great beats. Oh, he's absolutely made some of the worst beats I've ever heard as well. Not as bad as Swiss Beats though, but
it's okay. We have an ongoing slander on the show when we talk about Swiss Beats.
Yo, you fit right in.
Swiss Beats is the worst successful producer of all time. Money Cash Hoes is the worst beat I've ever heard. And yet people will try to argue that it's a classic song to me. And it's literally like just the worst. It's like a fucking cat fell asleep on his computer, on his keyboard and he recorded it and sampled
this on. I have this ongoing joke where I basically imagine that in like 98, 99, when Swiss was making beats, it was literally, he had basically was surrounding himself with keyboards and just like hitting like different keys with his elbows and just like, oh, you know, sort of like accidentally falling into a beat.
Dog, he got sued by Casio for just using
that like, Eve song. Yeah, what I want
sounds.
What y'all want? Yeah.
Yeah, they were like, yo, no, you can't do that.
That's funny. Yeah.
But, you know, Swiss has the last laugh. He's posting an Instagram photo right now of himself on a yacht with Alicia Keys, and we're sitting here talking about him on a podcast. So right. Go ahead, Swiss. You win. Swizzy.
Tugboats.
The tugboats. Oh, man. That's our favorite. That's probably our favorite Swiss ad lib of all time is that World War III. He just randomly just starts with tugboats out of absolute nowhere.
I've never heard that. I'm going to have to go back and listen to it.
Oh, World War III. Yeah. It's what is that? That's Rough Riders Volume 2.
Ride or Die Volume 2. That's Jada, Scarface, Snoop, and Young One.
And the beat that was like three chords, right?
Yeah, it's like bum.
And it just looped it.
Sounds like a foghorn, but he thinks it's a tugboat. Yeah.
Tugboats, that's a hot ad lib. I like that.
Yes.
So I'm glad we've sort of got around to Beyonce.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I think that with her, just before we get into that, I think that with her, she's a little different than Jay. We've talked about this on the show before as well, but I think that's the one thing missing out of her career is a classic album. The comparison that she often faces is, I mean, Michael Jackson. And of course, Mike has at least three classics in his discography, at least. And if she wants anywhere near that conversation, I mean, she won't get it, but there will be people who entertain it. But she's missing a classic album. And I think with this, I think she really intended, and I think that was why she scrapped the album. Or I guess that poses another question. Was the scrap even, you know, because Beyonce is very controlling about what gets out and what doesn't get out from her camp.
I don't know. My take on Beyonce, like, I don't think Beyonce's ever made great music. There are times when she's made good pop music. And I guess that's a little bit of a dig just at pop music in general. But hey, if it's popular, it's got to have some sort of artistic quality. But I don't ever look at Beyonce like I would never put her in a category with Michael Jackson. Never. Like, she might be on a pop culture category like Michael, but like musically, no, not even close. I don't even know Beyonce's albums, but I mean, I'm not her target demo. But Beyonce's never made a classic album, not even close. And I would argue that most of her albums are fairly average from a musical standpoint, but I know she's Queen Bee, so she shuts it down in that demo and they love her. But musically, I don't know.
I would agree. I mean, we've definitely talked about this in the show, is that, yeah, I mean, for someone of her stature, she does not have anywhere near a classic album. Now, ironically, her first album probably had her best run of like singles that were good, you know, were good pop singles while being incredibly popular. Like that first album had like, I mean, they sound hilarious now, right? I can't hear Sean Paul on a record from 2003, 2004 and not laugh, but like it was of the time and that, you know, that was a great run for her. But like, I don't know. To me, she's almost always underperformed considering her stature.
You're actually making me Wikipedia Beyonce's discography right now so I can look at how bad this discography really is.
That's a time-honored tradition of Clock Radio speakers. Almost at least once an episode, someone hears me typing because I'm going to Wikipedia.
Yeah, Dangerously in Love. You're right. That first album, the one with Jay-Z. Yeah. Jay-Z single and Sean Paul, of course.
Armand, are you gonna defend Beyonce's discography?
I'm not, certainly not.
I was gonna say, did we lose Armand? Armand, are you there? We might have lost Armand. Oh no.
Oh, let's call him back. Someone's gotta defend Beyonce here.
Oh goodness, hold on.
I will say that Me, Myself, and I was the
Armand, is that you?
Armand said he can hear us, but he can't talk. This would be the time where we just go after an artist that he loves and he just has to listen to us, but he can't defend it.
We could just talk about he likes R&B way more than I do. Oh, you know what? He doesn't think Voodoo's a classic album.
That's a falsehood.
See, there you go. I think because I think it was probably when we talked about Frank Ocean and I said that I said that Frank Ocean's album was probably my favorite R&B album since D'Angelo. And that just, he just got irate.
We should talk some R&B. We should get him back here and talk some R&B.
Yeah, he's, you guys suck. All right, I'm going to end the call with Armand. You still there, Hyphen? All right.
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, good. Let's add.
I can't believe how many Scott Storch records were on this first Beyonce album.
Oh, he did everything except, he did all the singles except,
Except Crazy in Love.
Yeah.
Yo.
Oh, hey, there's Armand.
Jesus. I can hear y'all clear as day. Skype was giving me no issues, and then you decide to go for the jugular and talk R&B. I hate both of y'all.
Is Voodoo not a classic album? Like, literally lay the steps for how that's not a classic album.
It's a good album. I'll say this. It sounds a lot better now that I'm older, but when it was out, I wasn't like, nah. It was all right. It was
how cool. Old were you when it came out?
2000. So I was 16.
You weren't ready.
Right. That's what I'm saying. That was my introduction. That was my introductory year into R&B. That was cupcake.
It's an advanced listen.
Morning on the phone time.
You're letting them off too easy, Hyphen. Don't.
I mean, what did you like at that time? 112, right?
My two albums that really killed or really got me into R&B was Erykah Badu, Mama's Gun, Carl Thomas Emotional, gotta go with the sweater music, the turtleneck music.
Laid back on the couch with the hand on your forehead, rocking the sweater.
Behind the fire, in front of a fireplace, absolutely. I like Jill Scott's first album. Like, it's just what, I don't know. And it's weird because I was a big Soul Korean fan back then. So I was on like Water for Chocolate and Things Fall Apart and all this, like loved it. But it just didn't do it for me at the time. At the time, I thought it all sounded the same. Keep it real.
Yeah, that's fair. But going back, do you think, are you giving it classic status now? Or are you still don't think that it's that quality of an
it's
album?
It's not a classic to me, but it's a really good album.
It's fine. I went to see D'Angelo play at the House of Blues in Boston earlier this year, and I spent the entire episode after that just raving about how great the music was, and Armand had to put up with that, so that's fine. He's a good sport.
I love D'Angelo's dope, man. I don't have a problem with that. He's a great artist. I just didn't think Voodoo was a classic. Big deal. Big whoop. As for Beyonce,
let's bring it back.
No, I'm not going to defend her discography because the only other album besides Dangerously in Love that I thought wasn't terrible was Four. Four had some good singles on it. It was the most R&B album. I think that what she did with that album, I think she released it a little too early because it gave birth to Kaleidoscope Dream and a lot of Channel Orange, and there's another pop R&B album that came out during that time. So it basically did what Beyonce tried to do with Four, but those albums did it better.
Yeah, I'm looking at Four right now. Party, Love on Top, Run the World, obviously big in the clubs. I don't know. This just isn't my music. I'm not, you know. Oh, look at that. Frank Ocean wrote on one of these records. I didn't know that.
Yeah, he wrote, I think he wrote I Miss You.
Yeah, that is correct.
It sounds like a Frank Ocean record, as does some of these records on this. Can we just talk about the Beyonce album? Can we just do that?
I was actually just going to say, I think Armand and I, we're probably going to record a separate episode after our conversation, because we typically, when we do an album, we do like track by track. We're going to talk about like producers and everything. And if you haven't heard it yet, that's going to be incredibly boring for you. But one question I did have, and this sort of goes back to the whole concept about an event. So, you know, we had Jay do the app with Samsung and get paid up front for, you know, hypothetically a million copies or however that works. And then you had, yeah, I don't, it's all nonsense. And then and now you've got Beyonce not doing an app or anything like that, but having this fully formed project, including real videos for every song, not like 50 Cent the Massacre, you know, videos, but real videos for every song. Like, you know, Jay used the hashtag new rules, which drove me crazy earlier this year. But like, I guess what I would ask of both of you is, do you see like any other big name artists sort of try, you know, maybe possibly taking either of these approaches, sort of like making their own album an event in some way?
Yeah, I think the next Drake album will be something different. You know, I'm good friends with Jake One from Seattle here, who's produced for a bunch of people, including Drake. And I don't think this is like a violation of confidence or anything. He was talking to me about, you know, Drake was just here and he was backstage talking with Drake. And Drake was telling him about how he can't really figure out where his next album is going or like what he wants to do with the next album. Like he wants to rap more, et cetera, et cetera. I think he's an artist who's going to take a step back and be like, well, should I just, you know, release another quality project or should I try to do like a game changer? So I think he's someone who's going to think of like new ideas and try that. All the big artists, you know, whatever Kanye's next project is will be interesting for sure.
How about you? I was going to say, how about you, Armand?
Is that going to be Yeezus 2 or is that going to be Watch the Throne 2?
I don't know. I think both are in production. I think Kanye's best work is by far his solo stuff.
Right.
I think there's no question about that. So I'm hoping for another one. I'm not sure I want another Yeezus right away. And I don't know if I were Kanye or if I was asking Kanye to make the best music for me, like every year Kanye could drop an album like My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy and it would be amazing. Like those, he can release those things, you know, every other year or whatever, he could just drop a new album just like that and make the same songs over and over and they'd be great. And he'd be my favorite artist. So I don't know if I want another Yeezus, at least already. I'm still enjoying and digesting this one, but maybe he'll follow it right back up and take it even further on the next one. I don't know.
Yeah, I think with Q-Tip producing that album, it's going to be a little more hippity-hoppity. I think he's probably going to – I think he had to go – I think from what he's saying in some of these interviews – that the going left with Yeezus was intentional. And with this next one, he's going to go back and, I mean, scale back in Kanye terms is still doing something completely different. But I think this one will be more rappity rap, hippity hop.
Kanye's never released two like actual solo projects in a row that sounded like the one that was before.
Right.
Like,
right.
You know, certainly you can draw a lineage from Dark Twisted Fantasy and how that evolved into the sound for Watch the Throne and how that evolved into the sound for Cruel Summer. But in terms of actual like solo Kanye projects, they all sound different every time.
Yeah. Which is why Kanye is the best artist in the last like 10 years or whatever in hip hop. It's the same thing. The same reason why Outkast is the greatest rap group of all time. You know, they're not the most influential. They're not the most groundbreaking, but they're in my mind, the best rap group of all time because they released classic album after classic album and they all sounded different. No one else can do that. Or no one else has done that, at least yet. And I think Kanye is the same way. Solo album after solo album, they've all been ridiculous. And they've all been different.
You don't think Outkast is like Run DMC for this generation almost?
What do you mean?
In terms of influence, like they've influenced a lot.
I think they've influenced a lot, but you can't say their influence is anywhere near a Run DMC just because of the timeline, right? Run, I mean, they're further back. If you look at it like kind of like a pyramid, with the first rappers being the very top of the pyramid and everybody cascading down from that, like Run DMC is so high up on that pyramid just because of the timeline that they, by definition, influence so many more people underneath. Outkast comes further down in that pyramid, and they've certainly influenced a lot of people. Influenced Kanye, for example. Influenced Kendrick Lamar. Kendrick Lamar raps exactly like Andre 3000 did in like 95, right? Yep.
There's a record on this Beyonce album where Beyonce's rapping like Andre 3000.
Yep.
That's awkward.
You talking about Haunted?
Yeah. I mean, we'll talk whenever we do the track by track, we'll talk about that. But like, I would agree that like, Run DMC is certainly higher up on that pyramid. So just by the very nature, they're going to have sort of more opportunity to influence more people. But I don't know, you know, Outkast influence certainly, they have a very unique brand of influence. Whereas trying to chart Run DMC's influence, especially outside of hip hop, like sort of how do they affect R&B, gets a little sort of dicier. Whereas because, like to me anyway, because Outkast sort of was so particularly unique and because of what they meant to their region, like I feel like their influence, maybe it's not more, but it appears to me to be a little bit broader.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, you can start getting into the whole debate, you know, Run DMC doing the record with Aerosmith, like what did that mean for music? None of us were really old enough to comprehend that at the time, right? Like,
no.
That happened when I was, what, 4 or 5 or something. So I don't get how big of a deal that was to have the biggest rappers working with a rock group in, like, 1987 or whatever. Outkast probably touches more genres because of Aerosmith collaboration. I can't think of Run DMC's involvement in really anything other than maybe the Jagged Edge remix that sampled their drums, right? But I don't know. I'm always going to defend Outkast. Like I said, I think they're the greatest rap group of all time, from music, from consistency, from creativity, from quality to commercial success. You factor in all the different things that you would use to judge like overall greatness, and they consistently outrank everyone else to me.
Yeah. Armand, you think that's fair?
Yeah, that's fair.
I'm trying to figure out how to classify Wu-Tang, but that's not really... That's not even
Wu-Tang's up there. They're absolutely up there.
But I mean, to me, that's a different concept entirely.
I think if we're gonna talk about, because I was really just thinking about just hip hop with Run DMC, just because I know, you know, a lot of my OGs always say everybody wanted to be like Run and wanted to be like LL. And when I think about that era, a lot of the rappers there were rapping in the same cadence. Even down to the hand movements and style of dress for dressing like Run. But you're right, the Aerosmith takes the Aerosmith and the deal with Adidas take them over the top. As far as Wu-Tang and it's weird, like when I think of that, you think of Wu-Tang and Outkast, and these artists are also in a subtle way influencing artists of different genres as well. Like rock groups and some pop star and even just actors and actresses, like it goes out, but they don't say, yo, you know, it's not cool to say that now, like, yo, I, you know, I'm influenced by Wu-Tang or I'm influenced by this. It's more cool to do your own thing. But I think if we really broke down and people were really just honest about who and what influenced them, I think you see Outkast and Wu-Tang on a lot of people's lists.
Well, especially now. I mean, yeah, a lot of the people that Run DMC influence are no longer active, so.
Right.
All right. Armand, you got anything else for Hyphen?
Nah, did we already get into, like, I know Hyphen talked about it, but do we really get into how radio works? Because he kind of said we wanted to get into it, but did we really get into how radio works?
We talked a little bit about it, but I mean, you know, it's all about ad sales, like we talked about. And one thing I always try to tell artists who want to be on the radio and don't understand why they're not on the radio is that it's kind of a machine that has a built-in like ecosystem, and everything happens because of how all the pieces fit together. So if you have a new song that you want played on the radio and you're not signed to a major label, you're pretty much not going to get on the radio. Because with the limited amount of time that these music and program directors have, the only people they're talking to are label promoters. They're not talking to independent promoters anymore. So you have to be on a major label to even get in that conversation. The major label has to decide they want to push your record. Like I've been in meetings where someone will say, oh, well, what about this artist? His song is on your label. And the label will say, eh, we're not focused on that. We want to push this. So if you've got X number of slots available to play songs on your station, you can't play everybody. And so the labels will decide what they want to choose to push and when they want to push it. So that's kind of the ecosystem that's developed. And the only way to get around that is to make music that becomes so overwhelmingly popular that they have to include it. So Drake did that. Macklemore did that. I think those might be the only two examples I can think of where songs just got so popular online that they ended up going to radio without even a major label support. So yeah, if you're an unsigned artist, why would you ever want to be on the radio? Why don't you just try to dominate online and let radio come to you? Because if you're making music to get on the radio, you're going to make music that sounds like what's on the radio. But what sounds like what's on the radio, that's old. That's already reactive. Like you're already 10 months behind, 12 months behind.
Right. So do you know of any DJs and any, like where does the artist go to take over online? Like how does that, is it blog, are blog sites still relevant? Is it SoundCloud? Is it AudioMac? Like what would you tell, where would you tell the artist to go?
Literally everywhere. Like there should be no excuse. There should be no medium that you're not on. While you're on YouTube, you should also be on Vimeo. I know Vimeo was big a couple of years ago and it's probably died down a little bit, but you should have your same content available on both. I don't see why you would limit yourself just to one. You want to be on SoundCloud? That's great. Also be on Bandcamp. Also be on AudioMac. There are probably some people out there that say, no, you need to focus your efforts. But I think you just not necessarily flood the market because you don't want to spam yourself available on all these different mediums. And then it's about figuring out the right way to promote it. And we talked about the wrong way. So like on Twitter, just hitting everyone up and telling them, yo, check out the song, check out the song, check out the song. Like that's the wrong way to do it. You need to maybe kind of seed it with people that you think are tastemakers. So hit up those people that you respect, that you see influencing other people, and see if they can promote it. So like just before we got hopped on this call, like I tweeted the link and Facebook the link to go download this new album from a local group here in Seattle called The Physics. And they're my favorite local crew. And they didn't even ask me to share that or anything. But they know that if they got me the music and if I liked it, that I would share it naturally. So they could go out and spam 100 people, or they could get it to me and then I can tweet it and people will know that, oh, if Hyphen tweets this, he's not part of this group. He's not getting any compensation from it. So it must be something he actually enjoys. And they're probably more likely to check it for that. So if you're an artist, you need to sit back, you need to get with a good team, you need to develop a strategy, you need to have someone you can trust, because as an artist, you really do need to be focused on the music. And if you can get with someone who can kind of help you focus on the business side and the promotion side, that's really important, because I can't imagine how difficult it is to try to make great music and then promote it at the same time. There's just simply not enough time to do both, especially if you have to have a day job factored in too.
So that's interesting. So let me ask you about this. I mean, you talk about like sort of the word tastemaker. So what I've seen is now you start to see people have more that certain people online. And I mean, I think a good example is someone like Shaheem Reed, who is unapologetically like in the corner and essentially on the payroll of some artists or some labels. Like is that something that you think we'll see more of? Like as sort of all these, like you said, the tastemakers aren't on radio anymore, right? These guys who either they were magazine writers in the 90s and the 2000s, or they were on the radio. And as they sort of make the move online, do you think that more that we'll see more stuff like that, where it's just, we're going to be really obvious that we like certain artists and we're going to promote their stuff on my blog, or I'm going to be on their mixtape or whatever. And we're all just, you know, we don't think anybody's going to care.
He inspired one of my tweets. I remember one time, just because I was so annoyed by people retweeting his comments about how good the MMG, like latest MMG project was. Mm. And I was like, yo, his opinion means nothing to me. This is about that particular project. So I don't know that guy personally. I know he's been working in the music industry forever. I'm sure he's a very nice guy. I'm sure he's super well connected. I'm sure he's very knowledgeable about hip hop. I'm sure his intentions are good. But at this point, like you said, it's clear that he's part of the MMG camp.
Yeah.
So if you're some sort of journalist who also is part of a group, essentially, and you start tweeting about how good that group is and how the music is like next level, like that opinion means nothing to me. You might as well be Rocky Fresh tweeting that, or Wale tweeting that, or DJ Khaled tweeting that, because you're part of the crew. So you've now lost any sort of integrity, and I can't respect your recommendation then, because it's completely altered. So the people who I respect are the people who have their own thing going on and aren't really part of, you know, the label or the artist or the crew, people who are genuinely fans of those people. So like Elliot Wilson's in an interesting position because he makes money directly off all of this stuff, right?
Mm.
So he will get paid by a label to put up a wallpaper for Pusha T's album on Rap Radar. So does that influence what he says about Pusha T's album?
Mm.
It might, right? That's a question that every journalist and every blogger and every tastemaker is going to have to make for themselves. I've been doing this 13 years. I've literally never taken money in any fashion, and I always laugh at someone who even offers it to like promote something. I only promote what's good. But I'm also lucky enough to have a day job where I don't have to take money for the music stuff on the side. You know, if you're a blogger or a journalist or a tastemaker that only works in music, at times they're getting conflict of interest. They're taking that money. And you can't tell me that then you're going to promote it objectively or you're going to review it objectively. Like, I just don't buy it.
Mm.
And all the blogs, all the big blogs are the same way these days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all getting sponsored by labels because the labels say, well, hey, that's where the music fans are. Can I buy advertising on your site? Remember when Tyler bought ads on Two Dope Boys?
Yeah.
In one of the grimiest advertising moves of all time because he hates those guys and they can't stand each other. And so he was like, yo, I'm just going to buy ads all around your site. But at the same time, Two Dope Boys made money off it. So it's kind of a interesting. That was an interesting case.
Yeah. Ads on blogs, like, that's a case where it's almost better. Like, well, at least you hope that if you're talking like a big, like online news and times, that's big enough to have separate, okay, we've got advertising over here and we've got editorial over here. You hope that in a case where you're so big, where you have different teams and you sort of come from this background of we're going to be sort of, they're independent and one doesn't influence the other. You'd hope that that happens, but you know, you're even probably afraid of that happening there. But for a blog, even though some of them certainly are making money and they're a lot bigger than they used to be, there's probably still a ton of like the person who's getting the offer for the ad then goes and turns around and is supposed to write this thing about this music they just heard, right?
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, I don't go to Rap Radar enough, but I would be interested to see who buys advertising there and what Elliot and B-Dot and whoever else writes for them write about those people's projects. I would imagine they are overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah.
And maybe if I were in Elliot's spot, maybe I would only want the ad dollars from people that I actually enjoy their music from, because that could solve the issue. But if Juicy J comes to you and says, yo, I want to buy advertising on your site, and you sit there thinking, wow, I'm really not a Juicy J fan, your review better reflect your actual feelings. Otherwise, you've called into question all your integrity. And I think Elliot is an amazing journalist who's been doing this for like 25 years, 30 years. So I think he's got about as good a level of integrity as you could expect and want in someone at that level. So I think he's probably doing everything on the up and up. I have no reason to think otherwise, but it's something that would be dangerous. And it's something that the consumers, as they're looking at these sites, should understand. So don't just follow Shaheem Reed and think like, oh, wow, this MMG album must be really good. He keeps tweeting about it. Like, then you're an idiot.
Right. But do you think because Rap Radar is owned by Interscope, right?
Oh, I didn't even know that. That throws it into even more of a question. That's a big issue for me then.
Yeah, I think it's owned. If it's not owned by Interscope, it's definitely owned by Paul Rosenberg. At least.
This is like the Beats headphones. It's like, okay, so Beats Music is coming out with their new app. It's going to compete with Spotify and Pandora and all that. Like, and so what do you think the music that gets featured on Beats Music is going to be?
Exactly.
Mostly Universal Music Group music, at least in the best positions on, you know, when they're trying to give spins or have people download stuff. So yeah, it's all a conflict of interest, which is fine, but the consumer needs to know that it's going on, and then make a decision based off that. If you are doing all this and trying to hide it from the consumer, that's when there's an issue.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ironically enough, I found this on one of the 25 part complex things.
I knew you. You were way too quiet. I knew you was looking up something.
Yeah. Paul Rosenberg is the co-founder of RapRadar.com.
There it is. So that's why Eminem is on there so heavy. That's why Slaughterhouse is on there so heavy.
Well, think about Shade 45. I mean, you literally have the biggest, Sirius station, Sirius and XM since the merger. Like, it's called Shade 45. It's shady. It's their label.
Mm. Yeah.
They have a radio station. So they can't be objective.
And that makes a really good point. I don't have anything else to add, but the point that you're making that artists – or that these entities just need to be honest and say, you know what, you know, Rap Radar is this. We are the authority on hip hop online journalism, but we are a subsidiary of Interscope Records, of Shady. So our stuff may be a little biased towards artists who are on our label. You think that the general public will respect that more, or do you think that kind of puts a bullseye on them?
The general public doesn't understand that, because people are generally, they don't understand how corporate interests can be involved there. But the people that do understand it, I think will respect it. You know, I work for ESPN and we own Grantland, and
you fit right into the show.
Yeah, Bill Simmons runs Grantland, and I happen to be in a meeting with Nike like 2 weeks ago or something, where they were like, so did anyone read the Bill Simmons article trashing our Calvin and Johnson advertisements? And then the other ESPN like execs that were there got all kind of nervous, but thankfully the Nike people weren't too upset with it. But they were explaining about how they were a bit displeased when they go on Grantland and they see that Bill Simmons has written an article on Calvin Johnson, and in it he's essentially making fun of this ad campaign they did with Diddy and Calvin. And it's all kind of this weird issue, because we're getting money from Nike, right, to run those ads, but yet one of our writers has bashed those ads at the same exact time. So thankfully they were okay with it, and I think Bill gets a lot of credit for being able to say that without people fearing that, like, oh, you know, he's got a conflict of interest. I remember reading a FIFA review on ESPN FC, and everyone in the comments was like, oh, you guys have a FIFA review on ESPN FC, but yet you're also selling ads for FIFA right next to it. How do I trust that this review is accurate? And that's a decision the consumer has to make.
Well, and ESPN alone, I mean, you obviously know this. I mean, it's in, you know, they cover the very sports that they pay to then show, right? So,
yeah, so we have a big
huge
issue.
Huge conflict of interest there.
SEC. Yeah, the Southeastern Conference in football. Like, we're about to launch the SEC Network. Which is interesting. I mean, that's the conference that's so dominant in college football. So we have to be very careful with that. And I think, you know, a lot of that criticism that ESPN takes is probably valid. It's in our best interest to show things that are on our network and to promote those things that we have the rights for. But that's business. And I think the key is, do fans understand that? I'm not sure they do. But what's ESPN's responsibility? If they hide the fact that it's in our best interest to do that, then we're doing it kind of immorally. But if we're open with that fact, I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Interesting. See, so now, Doc, if we want to get Rembert on the show, we might have alley-oop.
Man, you should. I don't know that guy, but he's great. Huh? He's living the dream, really.
Yeah, he is. He's one of our favorite writers, especially on Grantland.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of us. Like, he's a hip hop kid. He, you know, he's a pop culture guy. He'd be great. He'd be amazing to talk to. You guys definitely should try to get him on the show.
Yeah, that would be dope. That would be super dope. Dang, that opened up a whole different can of worms. You're working for ESPN. I wish you would have said that like 45 minutes ago.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, working for Disney for my day job for ESPN, they own Disney, or they own ESPN. And then working for Clear Channel as my side job. And being a media studies major that kind of studied all of how media works and how we need to analyze things, it's an interesting spot to be in.
And then it's interesting, does that bring for you And then you have a underground hip hop radio show. Now, not only do you work for Clear Channel, you have a radio show that does not play typically Clear Channel stuff.
Yes, and we make fun of Clear Channel on our show much. That's more than we should.
Do you get like pulled into the office? Like you like this your slot is an important slot, right?
Technically, no. I mean, they gave us Sunday night from 10 to 12 for a reason. It's the least important time slot. You know, the same reason why Peter Rosenberg's late night show is on, what, midnight to 2 or something in New York on late Sunday night, early Monday morning. So there's a reason for that. And I'm not really upset with us getting that time slot. First off, I'm happy with the opportunity because they could be playing Bieber records for 2 hours and they'd probably have higher ratings. But we're lucky enough that we work at a station where they thought it would be a good, you know, half step backwards maybe in terms of the rating to give them 10 steps forward in terms of the respect and the integrity and what we bring. Plus, we play local artists. And if we play local artists, these local artists that complain about their radio station not supporting them have less of an argument. Mm-hmm. So that's a very important reason why our show exists and probably why Pete's show exists, because Ebro can tell these local New York rappers, like, yo, we give you a shot. If you're dope, Pete will play you. And if you're really dope, then we might look at you for like normal rotation, even though that's pretty much lip service.
Right. At least they're talking about it instead of just being dismissive about it.
Yeah.
And that begs another question I want to ask you. I know here in Columbus, anywhere you go, they're going to say, oh, they don't support whatever. I guess the two-part question is, here in Columbus, we're actually putting out a movie that's going to be playing in the theater, in one of the theaters here tomorrow, and it's a documentary on the history of Columbus hip-hop and then some of the artists who are here in the city actually making an impact. Does your late-night show, because I lived in Spokane in 2007 and 8, and I heard about you over there. Right. So what does the local support for your show look like? Is it just rappers supporting rappers, or do you have an actual demographic who enjoys listening to music that comes out of Seattle?
I think both, for sure. A big thing these days is how funny it is to be at a show where there's a rapper performing and everyone in the crowd are rappers. That's happening all over the country.
Yeah.
So that's important. Like we will have a lot of our rapper friends will tweet us during the show as we play other rappers that are friends of theirs. So if I play a record from this kid named Saul, you know, someone from the Physics will tweet us and be like, yo, I love that song. And it's like, yeah, rappers helping rappers. Like that's part of it. But it's because they're rappers and they're also fans and participants in the community. We also have a lot of younger kids that listen to our show because they're disillusioned with what our station plays during the rest of the time, and they're amazed that we have our show. And they're not internet savvy enough to go check out a lot of these artists to begin with. So when I'm playing something from Mellow X or, I don't even know, like a R&B artist named Banks or like whoever I'm playing new, a lot of these kids, they're like, yo, I have not heard this person. And they're not going to hear that person for years until they get into college and really start exploring music on the net. So we provide a nice bit of exposure for that. But we get amazing support. I've literally never had anyone say anything bad about our show other than artists who are upset we don't play them. I can respect their opinion about being upset that we don't play them. But I always tell them, like, look, it's our radio show. So we get to do literally whatever we want. And I know that's completely unfair. They always want to be like, yo, like, play my record. Let the people decide. I'm like, I don't care at all what the people think. Given this amazing opportunity to tap the opinion and musical standards that I have, and thankfully people seem to respect and the majority of the people seem to enjoy those musical opinions and that taste. So I'm going to play the stuff I like. You know, J Live presses up t-shirts that say, real DJs don't take requests. And I've talked to people like Jazzy Jeff about that, and they agree. Real DJs don't take requests. If you want requests, you might as well just be Googling or YouTubing whatever song you want to hear and then play it. That's fine. But if you're hiring a DJ, whether it's to DJ your club, your wedding, you know, your bar mitzvah, your lounge, your radio show, what you are doing is you're ceding control of the music to that DJ. You're saying, take us on a journey, take us on your journey, which should be unique to you as a DJ. So what I play and what I present should be in a way that's different. It should be a set that's different than what Jazzy Jeff does. And Jazzy Jeff, of course, is 100 million times doper than me, like in terms of his musical knowledge and his presentation and all that. So what you're getting with our show is unique to us. Even if we play the same records as someone else, they would present it differently. But in theory, we should all be playing different songs and going in different places because we're all different people. And if you hire a DJ, let them do that. I get that if you're in the club and you want to hear your record, you can go request that. I got no problem with that. And if the DJ can work it into his set, that's great. But I really don't want the DJ to just be like, oh, okay, I'm only going to play requests. Well, then what are you there for? Why don't they just have a jukebox? Why don't they just have YouTube up and everyone can just type in the songs they want to hear and they'll just play them in a row?
That's interesting. Okay, this is my last question about that. That's interesting because whenever you hear Mr. C and Funk Flex and really any radio DJ, especially in New York, I don't really listen to too many DJs outside of, you know, who I like listening to. But when you hear them, especially Mr. C, who has successfully gotten his mixes on a available on a nationwide scale, he's always telling the people to call in and get their requests. Do they ever? Do you know if that's just radio protocol that they just want some sort of traffic or feedback coming into the station, or are they actually taking requests?
Probably both. I think when C DJs, and he's an incredible DJ, and I think it's so sad the kind of off the air drama and stuff that's getting causing everything to go crazy for him. Like I wish we could just be further along as a culture that it wasn't an issue and they didn't feel like he would have to hide that kind of stuff, because it's taking away from how amazing a DJ he is. When he's DJing, I think he's playing exactly what he wants to play. You know, most DJs will listen to requests, and if it makes sense for the set, they'll get it in there. But when he's doing like a Biggie throwback set, Mr. C's playing what Mr. C wants to play. Mm-hmm. And you should respect that, because no one is a better authority on Biggie than him.
Mm-hmm.
I listen to requests, and then I usually will say, okay, if I'm getting a lot of requests, first off, if I'm getting a lot of requests for the same song from like the same local artist, I know they've just told their street team and their people to call. So that comes across as corny. But if I'm getting requests for something, I'll go check out that song. And if I like it, I'll play it. But not that night, probably. I'll probably come back to it. The music's not going anywhere. There's so much music that's out there that when I hear a request, it really just like, okay, is that something I want to play? If I'm familiar with the song, I'll just disregard the request if I don't like it. Radio stations, a big part of what they do is it has to be a party all the time at the station. People need to think there's literally a party going on in the radio station, in the studio at all times. So morning shows do this a lot, right? All the bells and whistles and having five different people on air, and they got the funny guy on the street and they got the hot chick and they got the funny host and they bring in people. Like, they want it to sound like a party because there's an illusion to radio that it's all cool and everything's happy and fun all the time, when in reality, you're probably not even listening to something that's live, first off. It's probably voice tracked or syndicated. And then if it is live, it's just one dude in the studio or something, right? Or it's all smoke and mirrors. Like, you're not really listening to someone having the greatest time ever, but they're trying to present that illusion of a party to keep the listener engaged. So part of that is, what do you want to hear? Call up, bring in your requests. Now, whether those requests are actually used, I don't know. We used to keep track of them at Cube. We would have like a spreadsheet that basically had all the kind of popular and upcoming songs. And as people called in, not on our show, but on other shows that I would just sit in on and hang out because these are my friends, the DJs there, they would call up and say, yo, we want to hear this. And they would be like, okay, cool, thank you. They wouldn't play it, but they would mark that the request was made. And then the program director and the music director would review the request, factor that in with their research, and then they would use that as part of their decisions for what to play. I haven't seen that happen in years. I don't think that's happening at any stations right now. Very little to a commercial radio station and to a good DJ.
I think that's as good as time as any to wrap this up. That was really great, man. Thank you.
No problem.
So again, everybody, if you don't already, please go follow him on Twitter at DJ Hyphen. You can follow me on Twitter at @Doc_Beats. S, not a Z, please. You can follow Armand at Armand Wake Up, all one word. Use the hashtag Clock Radio Speakers and let us know what you thought about this show. You agree with us? Is Armand okay in thinking that Voodoo's not a classic? Or more importantly, What do you think about basically anything we talked about? You guys got anything else you want to say or plug?
Nah, I just want to just thank Hyphen for coming into the show. You dropped some serious jewels and you added on, and there's always a place here for you on the show. If you ever got anything that you want to get out, man, just let us know. We'll be more than happy to help you.
Man, I appreciate it. You guys are like, I can already tell you're the exact kind of like homies that I love talking to. Cool dudes that know the music and know the culture and respect it. So anytime you need me, I'm here, and I'd love to do it again, man. I appreciate it.
All right. So that's it for this week, and we'll catch y'all later.